age appropriate?
No, not quite. Wake up, folks. This is You Get the Blessing.
When I get older, losing my head many years from now.
This is me.
Will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
That's enough, Laurie. Welcome, everybody. This is Bo Mitchell and Bob Belts. You're listening to You Get the Blessing. And, Bob, I just had a birthday and turned 60 years old, and I'm telling you, it looks a lot worse when the number's written out than it sounds just in your head. Can you believe that song is fitting me now?
You'll always be younger than Paul McCartney. Just think of it that way. Whew. He's like gone by 64, so...
Yeah, but he's a rocker. And
he didn't lose his hair, though. He's got a diet, looks... though. Don't you think he's got a diet, he and Mick Jagger, because they've got to be great.
It doesn't matter
what
they do. They still look great. But yeah. I'm starting this show off today with that song because on my 60th birthday, my daughter gave me something that is an extension of my personality, and it's going to keep me young forever. She gave me an ice cream truck. And I want to introduce our guest today, Clint Hurdle, as you all know, former major league star and manager of the Rockies, but mostly my friend and fellow member of my church, and his wife Carla's with us today too. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. But Clint, can you believe that at 60 I get to be an ice cream man with my own truck?
I think you're pretty lucky. That's a pretty cool gig right there. I mean, delivering ice cream. I know my kids, they hear the bell and it's stop everything that's going on in the house when that guy starts ringing the bell coming in our neighborhood. But, you know, remember when we were 20, Bo, and 60 was really old? It's not that old anymore, is it?
No, I'm there.
60's the new 50.
I don't know about that. Like I say, hearing it was one thing, but then when I saw the birthday cards, happy 60th birthday, I was like, this is a little real for me. But the ice cream truck idea, for you listeners that know how strange Bob and I can be, is 13 years ago, I wanted an ice cream truck, and I want to drive in the city, and I want to give away free ice cream to churches that we've worked with for years and kids that probably are going to hear that ice cream bell or music and come out and think, oh, this is pretty cool, free ice cream this old guy's giving out. But I've discovered that ice cream men don't have the best reputation in the world. Did you know how weird they're viewed?
Just probably in the last 15 years when I've done a little research on my own. But, yeah, I wasn't aware. Kind of a transient job.
Yeah, it's slipping a notch. I mean, they're dealing things out of the truck that aren't quite as...
Not always ice cream.
Yeah. All right.
Well, we have a new identity, though, because when people ask Bo what he does, he says, well, I'm an ice cream man.
Honestly, they give me a hat with Bo Paw. My grandkids call me Bo Paw. It says Bo Paw's ice cream truck on the shirt and the hat.
I'm now an assistant ice cream man. So
you have a hat?
I don't have a hat yet.
Because if you have a hat, that clearly gives you some separation over a lot of the other ice cream men that are out there rolling in their trucks.
That's
if you
true.
Have an ice cream hat.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Well, I got it all. And speaking of turning 60 and this When I Get Older by Paul McCartney, I was thinking about when I first saw, I know you're sick of starting interviews like this, Clint, but when I first saw you on the cover of Sports Illustrated and what a stud you were, and I think it was Kansas City. Wasn't that your uniform?
It was. It was a Royals uniform.
So what year was that, the SI cover?
1978.
Okay, March. So I signed to the Cardinals in 71, and by 72, they had told me I had a bright future. It just wasn't in baseball, so I was on down the road. And you were just launching your big league career, and that SI cover put more pressure on you than you felt already?
It was like hitting a fast forward button, because I came from a small town and wasn't a lot of hype or notoriety. You know, I'd gotten some experience with a senior when I was a sophomore player that the scouts were seeing, but small town, it was a 4A school, but it wasn't a big town. So things were kind of slow, and it was just a town that everybody went to the high school football games, and everybody followed the high school sports. And, you know, you had your one mall, and you had your Dairy Queen, and you had your, you know, your steakhouse. your Western Sizzlin', and that was the best place to eat in town, and maybe a Dunkin' Donut. I think we had a Mr. Donuts. That's
now all of a sudden you got a local boy on the cover of SI.
And that was a whole new gig. That, like I said, fast forward, and now you're moving to a big city. You're going to play in the big leagues. They're going to give you some money. You know, you're going to go buy a new car. I can remember my dad saying when I signed the bonus, you know, he said, that's more money than I've made in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. So that really kind of got my attention also as far as putting things in perspective. Here's a man who's worked his entire adult life that has always provided for me and given himself of me. And, you know, it wasn't like, woe is me. He just made a statement because that's more money than I made in the last five years. Good for you, son.
Well, yeah, I signed for $6,000. I'm thinking you got just a notch more than that. And one thing that I've always complained about is my friend Garth Brooks and I, who started a foundation working with athletes, we spent enough time going around with our charity in the major league locker rooms that we sort of got to know everybody in the game. And I always admired you even when you were coaching, the way you were a people person and treated the guys. But Garth and I would pull off to the side and say, every guy in this locker room is a phenomenal athlete. So it always kind of ticked me off that even when you yourself thought you had underachieved, because how many years did you play in the big leagues?
10.
Yeah, and I think that is astounding, and you had a great career, and I was proud to be a fan of yours, following you even way back then. But I don't know that you were satisfied that you maxed it out. Were you okay with 10 years and doing what you did?
I think there was points and times during the 10 years that I played that I wasn't. I mean, I was always quicker, faster, harder, more. And, you know, you lived in a secular society. You're as successful as your last game. And I've probably fell in a couple traps. I tried to please everybody. And I can't give anybody out there listening today one key to success. But I can give you one key to guarantee you failure. And that is to try and please everyone.
Wow.
And I think I got in that lane for a while. So it got to the point where it never seemed what I did was good enough. I finally got full of myself one day, and I told somebody, I said, you know, the expectations are so high here. You know, everybody, I said, the only way I'm going to make everybody happy, I have to give $1 million to cancer, marry Marie Osmond, and win the Triple Crown. That quote got a lot of play for a lot of years.
Well,
and Marie Osmond's still kicking.
You stepped up for Marie Osmond. In fact, let me shift over here to Carla and say, Carla, when you met Clint and you all fell in love, was he just too full of himself, or was he just ripe for someone like you to come along and soften him up and tame the barbarian like all you women do for us nuts?
Well, I think one of his comments is that I had won the lottery. So I think that pretty much says it all for back in those days and his
wait a minute.
Frame
He's
of
saying
thought.
That.
Yeah, I
you?
Was coming from, a, you know, here I am, this young little girl in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and he's in town with the club. So, yeah, he kind of thought that I won the lottery.
Did you straighten him out on that pretty quickly?
Kind of, yeah. Over the next 18 years.
Come to an agreement. I'll tell you, if I'd listened to my wife, Gary, and I know Bob feels the same about his wife, Allison, a lot sooner than I did, I would have had a little straighter path in life than drifting off as I did. That's what you ladies are here for. But what did you love about him?
Well, he said he was going to take me on the ride of a lifetime after he said I won the lottery. So, that was very intriguing. It was kind of for someone from a small town, the excitement. I was not a big baseball fan. I think I used to come in about the seventh inning and catch two innings and go, boy, that was a great game. So
get you and Gary together. That's just what my wife did.
You know, it was just the right time, the right person.
You had to like his confidence.
It was intriguing. Yeah, it was.
Well, I find women want to be safe. And I know I was unsafe for a lot of years in my marriage, but that kind of strength and confidence? Did it make you feel safe, or did it make you feel like I'm?
I think
tied
I was the safe one. I think maybe he felt more safe.
So when did his confidence shift from a self confidence to a God confidence? Because on You Get the Blessing, this program, we try to share the fact that faith in Christ is pretty simple. It's outlined in the Bible. It's not complicated. The core truth says that God loves us, and we have to respond to it. And Bob and I are every week saying we're nothing special, but we are in relationship with Christ. So when did he shift from a self-confidence that's kind of contagious and attractive to this God confidence that I hear you all share with others nowadays?
I would think it was about 11 years ago when, you know, I think Clint finally figured out that there was something bigger out there than the world that we were a part of. And that faith grew over the next till today. So I would say about 11 years ago, you know, when he finally figured out that there was something else out there that was bigger than all of us.
Well, you know, I don't know you well, but I love you because my dad was a big league player for exactly 10 years, and I saw what it was like to be a baseball wife. So I really never had a daddy. He was gone playing ball, which is good. I had a great dad after he quit, but I'm just glad he got around to that decision because it is kind of an all-consuming world, and it is kind of a crazy pace. And I never, my dad was gone from February to November, and it's a little bit strange to say the least. So I'm glad you and my mom, Margaret, were there for guys like us. Clint, what were the steps there that led you to a faith 11 years ago and led you to kind of, I don't want to say the end of yourself, because you're still very passionate, appealing, friendly. I'm even going to say I like your ego. I like the fact you're a competitive, tough, two-fisted Christian. You're not a Daffy Ducker. So I like all that, but what were the things that softened you up to the point of saying, well, that sounds like a choice I should make?
Well, failure. And, you know, the interesting thing about God for me, and the intriguing thing, the word Carlo uses, that, you know, he uses failure all throughout the Bible, because that's really what men are really good at, left to their own means on a daily basis. And I actually made a commitment to Christ in high school. But I used my commitment to Christ, you know, as fire insurance, and I used Jesus ATM card for 23 years. I mean, I would be in, then I was out. Then when I needed some, I'd go get me some, and everything would start rolling again. I'd say, okay, God, I got it now, thanks, but I'll take back over. You know, we're rolling here a little again. And it was just up and down and trying to please other people and living for things and trying to, you know, buy things I didn't need to please people I didn't like with money I didn't have. And then 12 years ago, you know, I got to the point where I'd been divorced twice. I was really good at marriage. I got divorced twice, and I finally fell in love with Carla, and I got to the point where I asked Carla to marry me, and she just looked at me and says, like, you know what? I'm good. No, thanks. And that's when I was like, you know, what do you mean no? I mean, this is a lottery ticket for you right here. And she just made a very simple statement that really put me on my heels. And actually, that was a pivotal moment for me to do some honest self-evaluation. She said, you won't make me happy until you learn to make yourself happy. Mm-hmm. And then I had to go about the self-analysis on finding a way to make myself happy, because I truly was never happy in a consistent fashion. And that was revisiting the faith and revisiting my salvation and revisiting the commitment, the cross. And that started things headed in a better direction, in the right direction, in the only direction.
So when we do commit and we're serious about it, that's when, Bob, God's power seems to be unleashed in our lives. And
I think what Clint said is true for a lot of us, though. It you know, we have to kind of get broken a little bit before we recognize our need. And I don't know why that is. You know, someone said recently to me that, you know, that success doesn't teach men anything. And that, you know, really oftentimes it just takes getting broken and tough and in situations where God gets our attention. But but it does start everything in a different direction when we get real serious about it. And I think that's the other thing about brokenness is sometimes, like you're saying, I can remember in high school being exposed to, you know, to Christ through Fellowship of Christian Athletes, which is a great organization, but it didn't really take in a sense until in college when, you know, I felt like I kind of hit rock bottom. So for some reason, I think that if you go through a difficult time and come to faith, oftentimes it's much more powerful in your life.
Well, I'm not defending a life of being nuts, Clint, but I'm saying for competitive men that are listening today to this program, I'll just say this. Baseball is a weird beast in that you wake up in the morning and it says Mitchell or Hurdle at bat 4, runs 0, hits 0, RBI 0. I mean, they might as well put your name dash really stunk. And you dig in off a guy's 90-mile-an-hour fastball and you're thinking, what? There's not much Christ can do for me right here. I'm not sure he had the hitting instruction I had at spring training, so I need to. And you do start taking some of it back, and you need it to excel in any level of life, but we do get crazy, and brokenness is a good thing. So if you're listening today to the voice of Clint Hurdle or his wife Carla of this program, just know that this may be your moment where you're being broken, and it's onward and upward from here if you'll connect to Christ and make this a spiritual point in your life, not the lowest point in your life, but the best. And I want you to take a minute and do this, Bob, and then I want to go back over here to Carla. But when your son Baker was born, it was a point of brokenness for you. And then I want to talk about the way Clint and Carla are with their little darling Madison. So tell us quickly about Baker.
Well, we were together actually the day that sort of the bombshell got dropped, because our son was was having a really hard time kind of right from the start. There were some things that when he was born, they noticed he had some physical characteristics that, you know, the technical term they said was that, you know, he has some dysmorphic features, which, you know, means they're not quite what they're looking for, and that sometimes those can be signs or signals that something's going on. And we didn't really, we didn't really think a lot about it right at that point, because he seemed to do well. But by the time he was a year, he, you know, something was not right. And I can remember Allison and I, you know, going to Children's Hospital every, you know, about 3 times a week and meeting with all of these specialists, and nobody seeming to be able to figure out what's going on. And actually, I remember the day she'd gone by herself, you and I were actually playing golf together, and I got a phone call. And, you know, she was crying, and she said, well, she fired off 6 things. They think he's blind in one eye, heart murmur, might be some sort of, you know, genetic syndrome. I mean, and it was horrible. I mean, it was horrible. And again, we spent just about the next year almost every day at Children's Hospital, just trying to figure the thing out. So it's, you know, you really know you aren't in control of things when something like that happens.
And tell us, Carla, about Madison.
You know, Madison, I had a pretty normal pregnancy, pretty healthy, felt great. Didn't have a lot of movement in utero. So, you know, would go in every couple weeks since I was high risk to start with. I would see my doctor about every week or every 2 weeks. So they'd do the little stress test, and, you know, they'd get the heartbeat going. They'd be like, okay, you're good to go. But about 2 weeks before my due date, we went in, and she seemed a little flat. So they wanted to take her. It was actually the day Clint was having his press conference. I had to call him and say, you need to get dressed. You're not having a press conference today because we're going to deliver by C-section, which we knew ahead of time. But a lot of things, when you look back now, we see some views now as we look back that, you know, gave us some clues, but nobody really thought anything of it. But she came out, was pretty healthy, a little quiet, couldn't keep her temperature. A lot of things, you know, a little jaundice, act premature. But we had one doctor that just thought there wasn't quite something right. And so we proceeded over the next, really, 2 or 3 days, just, you know, test after test after test. And, you know, new parents, at least I was, you know, you find, you're getting to the point where you're like, you know, if you keep testing her, you're going to find something wrong. Just leave her alone.
Keep dropping long enough, there's going to be.
She doesn't have a lot of energy because you keep taking all her blood and, you know, just little things that as a new mom, you're just like, just leave her alone for a while. Mm. But that doctor had an inkling that there just wasn't something right. And we were, I was in for about 3 to 4 days. Madison was in for 14 days in the NICU. And by the time we came home, we had had a genetic FISH test done that proved that was the one test she passed, that she had Prader-Willi syndrome. So, and it was a devastating day. I remember talking to Clint. He came home early from the park, and getting the news from the doctor over the phone. It was just, you know, it's just not what you expect as me as a new parent. You just, that's not what your goal was. Our goal was to have this perfect child, but as we learned and as we grew, we're kind of thinking maybe we did have the perfect child because she's the one that keeps us grounded. So a lot of emotions.
And at that point, you really become caregivers 24/7, or is she able to function at school now and do well, and there's moments you're sort of off the clock?
You know, we have moments that we're off the clock, or as we found is healthy, is to take moments off the clock. Because when you're in that cycle, minute after minute, and trying to stay one step ahead of somebody all the time, we found that it's been very healthy to take some time off and give her a different perspective from somebody else. But it is a lot. You're always trying to stay one step ahead of what she's thinking, whether it's to head off, you know, something that's just going to head her down the wrong direction, make her uneasy, not secure. You know, it's a lot of time.
You're listening to the voice there of Carla Hurdle. Clint Hurdle and Carla are my guests today. And Bob Belts, my co-host, was talking about when his son was born and how he and Allison dealt with that pain they felt with some of the problems that were going on with Baker. But Clint, let me ask you, so you know Christ, you've Daffy Ducked a little bit, you're back into your faith, you got a beautiful wife, and now this is thrown at you. So that is it from that point of brokenness where you can really mark, okay, without Christ, I'm not sure we figure any way to get through this?
I think that's the way we looked at it. We both very quickly stayed right with God and just said, we're in, you know, we got to figure this out, but we're in. This isn't because of something we did. This is an explosion at conception that's chromosomal damage done, which makes our daughter hungry all the time. It's deletion of the 15th chromosome. You have a meal, you have a big meal, you say you're full. She's never full. These kids are never full. She's on a less than 1,000 calorie a day diet. And it affects them across the board on the gross motor skills, fine motor skills, IQ, speech. She's functioning and she's mainstreaming a year behind right now. It's a praise God story. It's blessings every step of the way. So we are where we are and we're good. But I did remember, you know, knowing that at that point in time, I mean, what is my faith? Where is my faith? And I continue to share this with other people because we always have that ability to seek out. Well, I think when we grow in our faith, have some maturity, when we do have tough times, we will seek out. But when we're immature, like I was for so many years, we isolate. I'll figure it out, head down, butt up, go hard. That's a man's mentality. We're ego-fueled. I got myself into this mess. I'll get myself out. Well, since then, I've had people reach out to me, and I just tell them, how else does God? I said, I don't know if this is right, but how else does God take our spiritual temperature throughout our life of faith, other than to throw some things at us or have some things happen to us that gives us the opportunity to demonstrate our faith back to him, to show that we are doing our lessons, we're doing our homework, we're in tune. We're not going to be just result-oriented and reactive to everything that happens. We're going to stay proactive to his word, his blessings, and his truths. So, you know, that's where we are. And I remember Carla cried and went through the emotions quick. I held off game face for a long time, but I cried in Houston a month later for 3 straight days. The only time I didn't cry was at the ballpark. And then still, in my faith growing, and I got down on my knees one night, and I still get down on my knees from time to time, But I said, okay, God, look, we're in. And I'm not a doubting Thomas, but I'm going to be a doubting Thomas. I'm going to be mad as an advocate here. I wouldn't take responsibility of doubting him. I said, I'm an advocate. Give us a sign. Mm. Give me a little something just so I know. Well, we got a letter in the mail that, it was from a book, and it was an explanation. No name, no address, no nothing. I came home, ran to Carla. We both cried, said, look, here it is. It was from The Clowns of God by Morris West, and it was Jesus' second coming, talking to a bunch of monks in a synagogue. And basically at the end, he just says, hey, this child is flawless and perfect. She will never pervert my ways or my words like you will. Treasure this child. I have chosen you. You have not chosen me.
Wow.
So in other words, get right, buddy.
Well, you did, and I'm sorry we're out of time, because I know this, the way you all speak is encouraging to people that are listening. So if you're listening today, be uplifted. Know that are there 22 chapters or more in Luke? How many chapters? I was going to quote Luke 22:31.
Well, just go ahead.
But it says, Christ is talking, says, Simon, Simon, Satan has requested of me that you be sifted as wheat. But the point being, all of us are going to get sifted. We're all going to go through stuff, be it a child, what my wife and I went through with legal issues I brought to bear on our family, be it the death of a loved one, call from a doctor, whatever. And I just am thankful for who you guys are and that you turn to Christ, each other, and you're in it, as you said, and I know your best days are ahead of you. Thank you for who you are and what you've done for this city and this state and baseball fans and fans of people like you everywhere. So we love you guys.
Well, thank you. It was an honor to serve as the manager. And I've learned through that my opportunity, my testimony was never could be stronger than the way I exited, not the way I entered and not the way I served on the job. Mm-hmm. So for me, there was no doubt it was time to go. It was out of my hands.
You did it with class, my friend. We all love you and proud of you. We'll see you guys next week here on You Get the Blessing, and I hope you've been blessed today by getting to know the hurdles a little better. And I can promise you this, just like my wife and I looked at each other in 1992, going through a slice of hell together, and just said, hanging our hats on the promises of Christ, we knew our best days were ahead of us, and yours are too. So say hi to Madison for us. Thanks, Carla. Thanks, Clint.
Thank you.
Bob, see you next week.
See you, Buzzy.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?